Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along. Coming up over the next hour, in the week where China's DeepSeek shook the US tech landscape, we'll take a closer look at how they managed to deliver such a platform for a fraction of the cost of those from the US and the data privacy concerns with the service. Whoop will join me to explain how it works, understanding the data and boosting your recovery score. Plus, the MD of Dell in Ireland will look ahead to tech trends for 2025. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. We're going to start this week, though, with Whoop. I mentioned it recently, but it is now my wearable of choice. I made the decision before Christmas to move away from a smartwatch, not because I didn't like it or I wasn't getting the benefit from it, but something shifted in me whereby I didn't love the notion of having my emails and my texts so accessible on my wrist. And I know you can turn those functions off, but there was still the temptation every now and then just to dip into the app because it was there. So I've made the move to Whoop, and I can honestly say I haven't looked back. I got a Whoop a number of years ago, maybe like 4 years ago, if not longer. And I will be honest, I wore it for a little while and then I stopped because the data freaked me out. I didn't like that even though I felt like I had a good night's sleep, my recovery score was atrocious. I wasn't reaching my strain target because I didn't know how to do that. I wasn't as active as I am now. And it just caused a host of issues for me within myself, where I'm a goody two shoes. I like following the rules. And for whatever reason, I just couldn't get it working in my brain. But now, at the end of 2024 and in 2025, thankfully, I'm much more active than I was. And I bothered to understand how it works and what the data means. If you are in a similar boat, if you've seen people wearing them, if you've seen the advertising, but you don't fully get the point or the purpose or whatever it might be, I have some good news. The VP of Global Marketing at Whoop, Brian Curtin, is with me now to talk us through every element of it. Brian, rather than me doing a garbled explanation of bits of information that I've picked up from here, there and everywhere, can you just introduce those who may not be familiar with Whoop to the concept and how it differs from a traditional smartwatch?
Sure. So Whoop is a health and fitness coach. It's a wearable health and fitness coach on a mission to unlock human performance. We track key physiological data like heart rate, blood oxygen, respiratory rate, heart rate variability. But we aim to serve our members with actionable guidance and coaching to help achieve your health and fitness goals.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the key point of difference. I mentioned this to you before we came on air, but you know, when I started wearing Whoop a number of years ago, I had it on my right wrist and on my left wrist was a smartwatch, and my smartwatch would give me, you know, fireworks when I hit 10,000 steps. And Whoop sometimes would say that my recovery rate was quite low and my strain wasn't, you know, where it should be. And I guess I didn't fully understand and appreciate what that data meant and also how I could impact it. So you can you just explain those two key metrics? So the strain and then the recovery.
Yeah, I can, of course. So, I mean, I think it's a problem in the industry at large that there's so much data tracked from these wearable devices, but consumers don't know what to do with the data, because data without insight, it's just numbers. So, you know, our focus is about taking that data and providing actionable insights and guidance, not just displaying that data. So the three, the core pillars of Whoop is strain, which is a measure of your cardiovascular output, recovery, which is a read on how ready your body is to perform in any given day, Sleep, which is exactly what it says in the tin, it is a measure of not just how long you're sleeping, but also critically a read on the quality of the sleep you're getting. And then stress, one of the newer features on Whoop, it measures and distinguishes between physiological stress and that physical strain. So it helps users understand their body's response to different stressors, and we also offer some stress relieving interventions like breathwork protocol, etc. But the personalized nature of the product is one of the things that really helps us stand out versus the competition or the competitors in the market. Measuring people against arbitrary numbers like 10,000 steps, etc., is can be motivational in the short term, but what we find is members aren't achieving their health and fitness goals in the longer term. People are wearing these things for months, and eventually they look in the places that matter to them, whether it be the mirror, the scales, the bike, your PB time, whatever it is, and they're kind of the same person as they were when they put it on first day. Whoop doesn't measure you against a random number. The first 30 days experience on Whoop is all about calibrating the data to the individual member. So actually the first 7 days you get very little from Whoop as the system really reads where your baselines are. And it's not until 30 days in where you're getting the full Whoop experience. It's benchmarking you against you so that when you wake up from a night's sleep or after a couple of hours exercise, we're giving people a score in terms of how you're performing versus your own body. A story I was only telling recently, one of the guys in the team, he's an inter-county footballer for County Meath, and Jess, this guy's a tank in his mid-20s, right? And you're talking to early 40s dad bod central here, right? If we both went out and did a 5K run, for Ronan, he'd go out and he does that before breakfast and he's only warming up. But for me, I'll be honest, it's a pretty good workout. And so if I was wearing another competitor's product, it would tell me I ran 5K and I did a certain number of steps and I did it at a certain pace. But Ronan will get the exact same data. In fact, he's probably ran it faster than I have, right? But the thing that really matters to us in terms of helping people unlock their best selves, for me, it would tell me that I've had a good workout, whereas Ronan is only warming up at that point. So really personalizing that data to the individual so that we can help guide people whether they want to sleep better or manage their stress or lose weight or get fitter, whatever it is. The core of that is benchmarking against themselves so that we can give people a coaching based off of individualized insights and data.
Yeah, and from my own experience, what I found is that now that I understand the data that bit more, I find it more beneficial. And also, I was sort of thinking about what's the why? So what is my why for wearing Whoop? And what I've come down to is it's not necessarily about weight or movement or anything like that. It's more just about helping me listen to my body because I'm not great at that. I can keep going and keep going. If something needs to be done, I'll get it done. But I find when the data is given to me on the app, but also when the AI coach gives me tips and tricks to best either mind myself or push myself, it's almost that tap on the shoulder saying, listen, you overdid it yesterday. You were on the go all day. Why not take it a bit easier? So it's not always about, pushing yourself to get that bit further. And I actually find that more encouraging, and I'm more inclined then to listen to the good and the bad because I do feel it's a bit more mindful.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the origin story is pretty interesting. Our founder and CEO, Will, developed Whoop, or he actually says he didn't realize he was starting a company at the time, but he was a serious athlete at college, and he tried the wearables at the time. We're talking 2012 now at this point. You think it's pretty early days in wearables. But he had a problem with overtraining. He was wearing wearables and it was counting what he was doing, but what he recognized was that there was nothing in the market really giving people a steer as to how their body was in terms of whether it's a day to push yourself, as you say, or it's a day actually you should take it easy and maybe hit the sauna for 20 minutes if you can. It's really that idea of being able to understand your body is the core use case of Whoop. And then, it's applied to the individual depending on their own goals. Whoop Coach, you mentioned the AI component. That's an interesting innovation in the last 12 or so months. It's a first of its kind partnership with OpenAI or ChatGPT, as most people will know it. And it's a conversational experience built into the app. Really meets members where they are on their health and fitness journey, and it allows members like you and I to ask questions and get tips and create workout schedules and nutrition guidance and things like that, all from that data. So it's all about making sense of the data, and being able to serve better guidance to the individual, depending on their own goals.
Yeah, I love that it's using the ChatGPT or OpenAI technology because it understands the context of my question. So if I get my summary of, like today, for example, I didn't sleep great last night. I had a busy day yesterday, so my recovery is down. And so it gave me my summary, but then I went back and said, okay, so what do I need? Like, how can I improve my resting heart rate for the day or whatever it might be? And it understands the context in which I'm asking the question rather than me saying, my resting heart rate is X. How do I get it to Y? It's just a very natural way to interact with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more data you feed in, the more insightful the answers will be back to you. So one of our other features called the journal, it creates a feature within the app when you opt in where you indicate behavioral choices that you make every single day. So there's a huge list of options where you basically select your whether it be nutrition in terms of X and Y supplements, or if you've had alcohol or traveled on a plane or slept in your own bed, use an eye mask. There's hundreds of these options that you choose the ones relevant to you. And then every day when you wake up, you do a simple yes, no, as to yes, I took that supplement, yes, I did a nice bath or whatever it is, or drank alcohol. And it begins to serve you back insights based around those choices that you make. So the first thing that people instantly recognize is just how bad alcohol is for you. So it's very clear that it's poison, right? Because it tanks your recovery, and you see that in terms of the impacts to your sleep quality and your recovery. And Whoop feeds that back to you because effectively, when you put those when you add those inputs into your Whoop data, the correlations happen behind in terms of when you make these choices, this happens to you. And so, it helps members identify those behaviors, whether it be your eye mask, your sleep mask, or a supplement, and it begins to guide you through your physiological data as to what the impact is in your on your body. And so it helps our members create protocols to help you be ready when you want to perform. What's really interesting to me is that back in 2012, when Will came up with the original concept of Whoop, he was really building a product with the aim of having it as high a quality a product as possible. So such high quality, if he wanted the best in the world to wear it. And so he created this product in the early days for professional athletes, and it worked. In the first 100 athletes, LeBron James and Michael Phelps were in there wearing the product, and really validated those early moves, I guess, from a product perspective. But over the course of time, what we've recognized, or what the business recognized, is the features and benefits that the world's best athletes enjoyed out of Whoop were just as applicable to an everyday person, not just aspiring athletes and young athletes, but actually executives. Or, I'll be honest, me as a dad, I'm a better dad when I'm in the green. I'm a better professional when I'm in the green. I'm a better leader to my team when I'm in the green. And so being empowered to make the choices, whether it be my sleep protocol or, drinking less alcohol or training at the right time of the day, enabling me to be ready to perform on the days that I want to, it enables me to get the most out of life.
Yeah. And what I love about it though as well is that although this might sound zero crack for people who've never tried it, even if you do go out on a Saturday night and you have a few drinks, the AI coach will explain to you what you need to do to get back on track. And, it'll tell you to drink a bit of water, to make sure you're getting plenty of sleep. And so there's always a road back. It's not a case of, oh, well, you've done it now. You're goosed for life. It's that thing of educating you on a day-to-day basis, depending on lifestyle factors. I wore it when I was in America recently, and obviously with time zone shifts and all the rest, it completely put my body out of kilter. And although I felt fine, Whoop was telling me that, give yourself a bit, like pace yourself back in because your body clock is a bit all over the shop and so on and so forth. And it's that education piece that I think really makes this stand out from other wearables that I've tried anyway, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, whether it be after a night out with your friends or the great use case you just referenced there, intercontinental travel, especially, jet lag is really challenging to people, and having an understanding as to, well, maybe you do need to sleep that bit longer, or whether other guidance that comes with it, helps you recover as quickly as possible and bounce back to be at your best.
Can you just explain how the model works from, a signing up point of view? Because again, in comparison to other wearables, when you go out, you can buy one off the shelf and that's the extent of it. Once you've paid your money, you've paid your money. How does the pricing model with Whoop work?
Sure. So another key differentiator is our business model. So it is a subscription, and there's varying options you can sign up for. You can sign up just a rolling monthly, which comes in at 30 euro a month, or you can pay 12 months up front for 264. We also, by the way, have a free 30-day trial because we know that people don't really get it until they try it. And when they try it and they see the benefit of it, we really believe that people will see the value in the investment that they're making in themselves. If you don't like it after 30 days, you can send it back, no questions asked. But the most powerful thing, Jess, about the subscription model is it fundamentally changes our relationship as a business with our members, because it's no longer the case that we just, get the new product out the door and we sell as many as possible and we move on to the next thing. Because we're a subscription, we have to be continually innovating and introducing new features like Coach, like Stress Monitor, that didn't exist when the Whoop 4.0 came out, because we have to fight for people's loyalty on an ongoing basis. And it completely changes the relationship, I guess, that our product team have and the need for us to continually serve value to the members, because people have a choice at every point that they can choose to move on to something else or take it off their wrist. I think that there's a really interesting cultural difference within Whoop, really putting the member, we don't even call them consumers, the members at the heart of the decisions that we make.
Yeah, that's something that I have really noted, in that I haven't changed the physical sensor part. Now I've got a few of the straps, and I like to change the straps depending on whether I'm, going for a run or if I'm going out for dinner or whatever it is. I like being able to change the straps so it looks as inconspicuous as possible, or it's one of those nice sports straps so it doesn't get sweaty and gross. But I do like that the device just works, and it's the software that changes rather than the hardware.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the product. The thing in your wrist, the hardware is really just a sensor. It's designed, it's one of the other key differences that people spot straight away is there is no screen. We believe in minimizing distractions and encouraging a mindful approach to wellness. This is all about collecting accurate data to feed the experience within the app that can then serve you those actionable insights that we mentioned earlier.
My final question is Whoop just for those who either like me are trying to build up their running or are professional athletes or athletes, or is it a good companion device for somebody who wants to get better insights and understanding into their overall health and make those gradual improvements?
It definitely started as a product for people that are serious athletes. Since the start of the business and as the value proposition changed and the features evolved, there is huge amount of value within the product for people that want to understand their body better and, we say unlock their potential. I really mean it when I say that I, as a professional, as a leader within my business, or even just as a dad, when I am in the green, when my metrics are positive, I show up better, both physically but mentally. I'm more present. I'm clear thought, and it has, enabled me as a someone that's definitely not an aspiring athlete or a professional athlete, to unlock, I guess, my best potential. Whoop isn't for everybody, and I think that's okay. I think if you're somebody who needs to, be motivated to get up and maybe you're starting your ultimate goal is a 5K. I think there's other ways to be motivated and get up and move. I think Whoop is for people that are really aiming to unlock their full potential, whether it be physiologically or mentally. I think it's ultimately for people that are motivated and want to understand as much as they can about their body and the relationship between decisions that they make in their lifestyle and their sleeping habits, etc., and really understand their body so that they can live to their best potential.
Yeah, well, I have to say it has been a game changer for me over the last wee while, and I can't see a time when I'm not going to wear it, to be completely honest. And that is purely based on the insights and also the education piece. That for me is the big thing. As you said at the top, getting data is amazing, and fair play to all the data gathering devices, but anything that can help me understand and also give me prompts to make educated decisions on the back of that data is most welcome. But I'd love to know from you or hear from you. Have you got a Whoop? Have you tried it? Have you considered it? You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. But for the moment, Rhian Curtin, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks, Jess.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
I grew up, I have three sisters, no brothers. I have three daughters, no sons. So I'm like surrounded by girls and women like my whole life. And it's like, so I think, I don't know. There's something, the kind of masculine energy I think is good. And
Yeah.
obviously, society has plenty of that, but I think corporate culture was really like trying to get away from it. And I do think that there's just something, it's like, I don't know, all these forms of energy are good. And I think having a culture that like celebrates the aggression a bit more has its own merits that are really positive.
Yeah, that was Mark Zuckerberg speaking recently about the need for more masculine energy in the workplace, particularly in tech. I have to say, I strongly disagree with those sentiments. Having reported on this sector for, the last decade, if not longer, I just think it's the wrong message to put out there, and it's the wrong approach to take. I could give you a million and one examples of why I think it's a bad idea, but yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see how that one plays out. But that's not the only message he's putting out into the world. On Wednesday night, he took to his socials to share updates from Meta as part of their quarterly earnings report. It was a pretty lengthy post, which he often does. And he said that there are now more than 3.3 billion people around the world using at least one of Meta's apps each day. He expects 2025 to be the year where intelligent and personalized AI assistants reach more than 1 billion people. And of course, he expects Meta AI to be the leader. He's also expecting the Ray-Ban Meta AI glasses to really take off and a ton more exciting, positive moves for his company, naturally enough. He told us that there's around 320 million users on Threads, and he's expecting Instagram to continue to grow regardless of what happens with the TikTok ban. But there's a bit at the end of this lengthy post that jumped out at me, and I'm going to read it verbatim. It says, "This is going to be a big year for redefining our relationship with governments. We now have a US administration that is proud of our leading company, prioritizes American technology winning, and that will defend our values and interests abroad. I'm optimistic about the progress and innovation that this can unlock." Now, obviously, it's going to be very interesting to see what that means for Ireland and indeed Europe. And not forgetting the Meta workers in this country. I mentioned earlier in the show the arrival of DeepSeek on Monday of this week, or the news of DeepSeek on Monday of this week. It completely put a spanner in the works. And we'll get into that a little bit later on. But it's very clear that Zuckerberg isn't slowing down anytime soon. And he's continuing and will continue to push for Meta to be at the top of the food chain. I would love to hear your thoughts. Are you concerned at all about the shifts that big tech is making? Or do you just think that as long as the service works, be that WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, sure, let them at it. You can email me, techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, it's hard to believe, but we're already in the second month of 2025. And it's obviously been incredibly busy on the political front, both here and abroad. But it is a good time to take stock and look ahead at the trends we expect to dominate for the rest of the year. And I'm delighted to welcome Jason Ward, the EMEA North Vice President and Managing Director of Dell Technologies Ireland, to the show once again. Jason, it's great to chat to you. Before we look ahead, how was 2024 from a Dell point of view?
2024, funnily enough, we're actually still in the middle. Well, we're just closing out our Q4 at the moment. So we operate not in the fiscal January to December, but until end of January. So we actually just released our Q3 results a couple of weeks ago. We had a fantastic Q3, $24 billion, 10% year-on-year growth. And I think one of the highlights of that was the massive demand for our AI servers. That part of our business grew 58% year-on-year. So far, we're seeing great traction, particularly around AI. So 2024 has been great. I think the latter half of the year accelerated, particularly spend around AI and AI servers, software, and the whole infrastructure around driving AI demand. We've certainly seen a big upturn there.
We'll get to the applications of AI in a second. But first, can you just explain, I suppose, the requirements and the structural demands of this technology that you've just alluded to there? What's required from an infrastructure point of view?
Yeah, so I think there's a number of different elements. You know, AI it's matured and it's rapidly maturing. You know, you've got so many different large language models. You know, you have OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, Mistral, Cohere. Then you've got some open source ones from Llama and obviously NVIDIA with their open source models. So essentially, you know, there's lots of large language models out there that are, you know, built on, you know, super huge GPU infrastructure. If you think about, you know, X and Grok and what they're building, you know, I think they've got nearly 200,000 GPUs in their massive cluster. So the infrastructure around delivering AI technology, you know, you require GPUs, so general processing units, obviously GPUs, which NVIDIA are really sort of dominating the market in today. You need storage, you need servers, you need networking. So you need a whole array of infrastructure to manage any of these large language models. And typically, a lot of these have been developed, by the hyperscalers or large language model providers. But more and more, we're seeing enterprises and companies, developing on-prem large language inferencing from these large language models. So the infrastructure required is growing, and there's a bigger demand for it, week on week on week as the models get bigger and bigger. And then obviously then as companies look to inference against those models for their own business needs in their own data centers, there's obviously demand there as well. So it's a very dynamic and fast-moving market at the moment.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting time. But I guess that some of the themes we're going to talk about are going to seem out of this world to some sectors and then be second nature to others. When you look at the broader picture, are there certain industries that will adapt and implement the newer aspects faster than others, or will it be ubiquitous in that people aren't going to have a choice but to embrace it?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think different companies are investing at a different rate. Okay, so if you think about it, obviously, companies who had the biggest budgets were first to avail of the technology and have been deploying it. But I think coming into 2025, it'll become much more ubiquitous, right? We've seen it pretty much. Financial services, manufacturing, and healthcare have been probably the dominating themes through 2024. Chatbots, digital assistants have been really sort of leading the way, or probably have delivered first mover advantage, and they're quite simple to deploy, very quick to get a benefit from it. But as we move into 2025, I think we'll see more, benefits being delivered across industries, across enterprises, because out of the box with these different companies, you'll have a lot more use cases prepared, if you like. If you think about Dell, we've released our Dell AI Factory, which encompasses infrastructure to host and manage large language models and inference against them, to develop against them, to manage your data, prepare your data, secure your data. And then out of the box, we give you various different use cases that you can deploy to your organization. So that might be a digital assistant, it could be a data-driven content creation tool, it could be a coding assistant, it could be a digital twin, it could be a inferencing computer vision model. So, more and more of these capabilities are going to be delivered out of the box to companies to use for their particular industries. So I think you'll see an acceleration of adoption through early 2025, and it'll go across industry.
Are you seeing customers coming to Dell saying this is how we're going to use it, or are you reaching out saying this is how you could use it?
It's a bit of both, Jess. Typically the most boards of most organizations, if you look at earnings calls over the last sort of 2 quarters, Gen AI is mentioned, predominantly in every earnings call. The increase in the usage of that language on earnings calls from CFOs and CEOs about how they're going to deploy it has increased enormously. So customers are coming to us and saying, "Hey, Dell, can you help us with our Gen AI projects?" And typically, what we find is, organizations will have probably 300 or 400 ideas of how they want to use Gen AI. And what we try and do is firstly help them understand, what's the outcome that they're trying to look for. And then secondly, the most important thing is your data, right? What are you going to do? How are you going to prepare your data? How are you going to protect your data? Are you thinking about releasing that data into the cloud? Are you thinking about, sovereignty of that data? How protected that data needs to be? So there's a whole data preparation thing. And then there's a business outcome conversation. If you've got, if the business comes to you with 300 use cases, you can't deliver 300 use cases up front. So how do you go through those use cases and pick the ones that are going to be most appropriate from a, whether it's a cost-benefit analysis perspective or whether it's a return on investment analysis to an organization. We have companies coming to us from might be a finance director, CFO, and he's going, "Look, I want to improve financial reporting and forecasting, or budget optimization, or risk management, or regulatory compliance." And then we've got people working in manufacturing, supply chain, saying, "Hey, how can you help us improve our supply chain or our manufacturing processes?" So we're involved in lots of different use cases, and delivering benefits around those through Dell's infrastructure, and then our capability, which is, I think, one of our unique, pieces of technology, is where, we'll provide infrastructure, validated infrastructure out of the box, with capabilities to interact with all of the leading large language models, but then more importantly, enabling an organization to inference against that large language model on-prem with the customer's own data. So it's protected, and then they get a return and benefit out of using their data against some of the new large language models.
Obviously, Dell is a legacy company, meaning you have the experience, but also the agility to shift to major trends like AI from a customer point of view. But has it meant that there is a bit of an internal shift in terms of your own operations and your own plans that maybe were on a whiteboard 5 years ago now being chucked out the window to adapt and facilitate these changes?
It's interesting. If you think about it, Michael Dell, he has a phrase, pleased but not satisfied. So pleased around the direction of the company, but not satisfied maybe with our growth or, what we need to do to grow further. If you think about the PC, for instance, everybody said years ago that the PC was dead. It's going to be replaced by mobile phones. And interesting now, if you think about AI, AI has been delivered through devices, through PCs. PCs are going to have, we have the era of the intelligent AI PC now, where PCs will have small language models on them, been able to develop and deliver benefits from that. So, and then Michael obviously acquired EMC back in 2016. So when you think about it, he had the PC business, we had a server business, then we bought the storage business. So probably all the ingredients that are going to be required to deliver AI, Michael had the foresight to build a company that had all of that capability, which was, I think he had an idea that, the market was moving in this direction. Obviously, him and Jensen from NVIDIA, we've worked with NVIDIA for years as well, through our gaming products as well. So, we recognized that, there was an era coming where huge amount of compute was going to be required to do development around Gen AI, because AI has been around for years, machine learning and so on. We've been involved in that high performance computing as well. So Michael steered the company and shaped the company to avail of, the market that, became the Gen AI market. So I think we had, through his and the leadership's foresight, we've, developed an array of products within our portfolio that were well suited to the market that just evolved over the last 2 years since ChatGPT was released.
Yeah, and from a customer point of view, will the devices that the average punter buys stay the same, or are they going to change over time to, again, facilitate this new way of interacting with the internet, the world, and work?
That's a good question. Look, I think what we're seeing now is you've got AI PCs, and I think, the devices that people have today, probably aren't going to be capable of really benefiting from AI. Obviously Microsoft and Windows is coming to, the new release of Windows, so you're going to need a faster, more capable PC to avail of the latest release of Windows. But more importantly, the latest devices have, if you think about it, computers of old, or your desktop or your PC laptop today, everyone's familiar with sort of CPUs, so central processing units. And then obviously with NVIDIA, you've got GPUs, general processing units. But the new AI PCs have NPUs, so neural processing units, which are specifically designed around AI type workloads. So battery power, you need much better battery power, need much greater capability to do, imaging, to do context determination. So the applications that PCs are going to use are going to become much more complex. Everybody's familiar or has heard of, OpenAI, ChatGPT, probably Llama as well from Meta. Now, they're large language models, but actually with the new era of AI PCs, more and more companies are developing small language models, which can actually sit on your device, on your desktop, which will enable you, whether you're a consumer or a small developer, to avail of the capabilities of these language models. And they may be developed specifically for your business. If you're in, if you're in finance, if you're in marketing, if you're in consumer goods, if you're a retailer, to be small language models developed specifically to help you benefit or design, content for your business. And having an AI PC will enable you to avail of that. So I think the big upgrade they reckon is going to be 2025, which is this year, right? Where a lot of devices are going to have to be refreshed to avail of this AI capability within the PC environment.
We've spoken on the show quite a bit about AI, obviously enough. Before Christmas, we had Salesforce on explaining AI agents. But one point that's cropped up time and again, for me anyway, with these conversations is the balancing of innovation and legislation. Like we know that we have the EU AI Act and the Digital Services Act and a whole host of other bits of legislation. And I'm wondering, what would your view be? Like, is Europe at a disadvantage, and do we run the risk of missing out because of those rules and regulations?
I think that's it's one area, and I've heard sort of people complain about the EU because of the regulation and sometimes the unwieldy regulation and sort of regulations that they put in to protect consumers, and sometimes it's seen as sort of stifling innovation. But actually, when it comes to Gen AI and as we move to AGI, I think it's really important, and I'd sort of commend the EU in terms of what they're doing around AI, because we really do need guardrails around how we develop or how we let AI develop. Like the latest models, they're so large, there's so much capability built into them as we move to agentic AI as well, which is happening right away. AI agents will be able to work on their own, work independently, work as teams for you, for your business. And the capabilities that they have, if they go unchecked, there's lots of different things or outcomes we could see from that, and not necessarily, true benefit to humanity or for individuals. So I think the EU putting guardrails around, firstly, how the models are developed, and then do we have the facility to go and check how the models have developed, what data was used against it, what's the outcome that these models, what type of capabilities can they develop, what are they allowed to do on their own initiatives? Protecting society against those type of capabilities is really, really critical. For instance, some of the models, they were guardrailed to prevent people trying to develop, say you said I wanted to go and develop a little nuclear reactor or something like that, or a nuclear warhead. All of the guardrails are built into a lot of the large language models to prevent you from doing that. But then there was a study done, I think it was just before Christmas, where one test agency went and spoke to the model in hexadecimal, right? And they were able to get the plans for mini nuclear warheads because the model wasn't trained to converse with somebody in that way. Obviously, there are large language models. It was sort of an English narrative that they were asked or sort of trained to work with individuals on. So there was ways around getting data or nefarious details from one of the large language models. So putting guardrails around this is really, really critical. And I think the other thing then is, if you think about the democratization of data and cognitive computing, it shouldn't really be he who has the most budget or the biggest pockets, or the strongest nation benefits over and above everybody else, right? Because ultimately, if you've got the biggest wallet, you can go out and command 100,000 GPUs or 200,000 GPUs, build the biggest cluster for inferencing, or building the largest large language model, and outperform any other organization or society or nation state. Is that right? Should there be more, of an equitable way of delivering this capability for the best outcome of, humanity from a healthcare perspective? So I think where the EU is going is definitely in the right direction, because, as we move to AGI, one individual enterprise country, dominating in that space, firstly, it wouldn't be fair, but secondly, it could be pretty dangerous.
Yeah, look, there's no denying that AI will continue to dominate the conversation both in and outside the world of tech. But for the moment, Jason Ward, MD of Dell Technologies Ireland, thanks so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks, Jess. Appreciate your time.
Now, when we come back, we'll stick with AI and delve a little bit deeper into the world of DeepSeek.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. Before the break, we were chatting to Jason Ward of Dell about the potential of AI in 2025. And I guess for the last few years, that conversation has been dominated by the likes of OpenAI's ChatGPT, Microsoft's Copilot. We mentioned earlier on about Meta's Llama. But a lot of that changed on Monday of this week. DeepSeek came out of the woodwork and sent shockwaves throughout the US. Here's a report from MSNBC.
Stock futures are down sharply this morning amid fears of an AI stock bubble burst. Global tech investors could face a $1 trillion wipeout after the news of Chinese artificial intelligence startup DeepSeek releasing an open source AI model at just a fraction of the cost of its competitors. The company's models appear to rival those from OpenAI, Google, and Meta, despite the U.S. government's effort to limit China's access to cutting-edge AI technology.
The most interesting thing about this particular thing that just came out is it's free. It's open source.
Whoa.
So meaning anybody can use it. You can actually run it on your own laptop. It doesn't have to actually be operated from China. You know, we talk about TikTok. It doesn't have to be like that. And you can actually see the code. So you actually can know whether it's secure or not secure or what it is. From a national, not just national security, but national sort of economic competitive perspective, if you wanted to deal a death blow to what seemed to be the U.S. advantage over everybody else in one fell swoop, if in fact this is real and what we're hearing, and it may not be, but if it is, boy, have they done something pretty remarkable to us.
Yeah, now look, obviously there's been a lot of talk, a lot of hot takes, a lot of conspiracies or chatter around DeepSeek, around the technology, around the building of the technology. But one thing that we do know for certain is that the Data Protection Commission here in Ireland has reached out to the company to find out how they are processing the data of Irish users. So this came out on Wednesday. In a statement, it was a very quick statement, they just said, the Data Protection Commission has written to DeepSeek requesting information on the data processing conducted in relation to data subjects in Ireland. Personally speaking, although I have played around with it, I wouldn't be putting anything personal or any sensitive information into it as of yet. Again, a great feat for China. Definitely shakes things up in terms of the AI players and the AI market. It puts huge pressure on the US companies, but as ever, time will tell what will come of it. We will, of course, bring you updates as and when they arise. But yeah, never a dull moment, chaps. Never a dull moment. That's it from me this week, I think. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. I'll be back with Pat Kenny on Tuesday morning. But in the meantime, have a great long weekend.